We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
That's up to him. It's his money. Quick note, Louisiana law, of course, if you have your lights, windshield wipers on, you need to have your lights on. Let's go to Walter Dublane, our friend, our guest, associate professor of economics and finance at my alma mater, UNO. Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Tommy.
Teaching summer school.
Yes, I am.
Tell me about this. One of the things that I heard on the Sunday morning talk show is about this new Democratic bill that the Manchin kind of surprised the Democrats with. That's the politics of it, not the economics of it, but had something to do with subsidies from Obamacare. And I was just wondering, in terms of this bill, who's still getting the subsidies? What does it cost to extend them? Walk me through all of that, because I'm a little bit confused with all of this, Dub.
Yes, this is from the beginning of Obamacare. There's two major things. One is the extension of Medicaid, which again in Louisiana we put 500,000 people on. But also for people who don't qualify for Medicaid, they could qualify for this individual plan, in which they can be heavily subsidized. So people making, you know, $35,000 can basically get a bronze plan for $35 a month or something very cheap. Now that goes up. The higher income you get, the lower is your subsidy. And it used to run out around 400% of the federal poverty line, which was about $900,000.
That's for a family or an individual? That was for a family or an individual?
That's for an individual policy, not a group policy, which is what most of us buy.
No, but the $100,000 limit was for a family or for a family of four or for an individual?
Yeah, that was family income, right.
Gotcha, okay.
What happened in the American Rescue Plan is that part of the COVID thing was that they extended that even higher. So people making more, you were getting bigger subsidies at high income levels and upper to higher income levels are getting subsidies. Those are going away, they expired with the American Rescue Plan. It's not touching the huge subsidies that lower income or at least middle and lower income people get. So I think this is a real important point. It's, in fact, I agree with Forbes magazine that it's probably good that these go away. Those probably shouldn't have been there in the first place as a way of trying to stimulate the economy. That was the wrong way to do it. And these people are at an income they can afford to buy insurance if they need it. They're not needy people. Not that it's expensive. You know, a policy for family four can be $17,000 a year, mm-hmm. And if you've got over $100,000, that's still a big chunk of change. But still, it's affordable. So I'm not too worried about this one. I don't know why. And again, I've been a little out of touch, but I don't know why Manchin is supporting this particular aspect of it. I think there's some things that can be done that would be good. But this one, you know, letting these expire seems to be right. Letting these new extra subsidies expire seems to be the right thing to do.
So the new extra subsidies were post-COVID and not originally called for in Obamacare?
Correct.
Okay.
And the ones that are going away, it's not touching the basic subsidies in Obamacare. And those were, you know, those really were providing health insurance to a lot of people who didn't have it before. And whatever you think of Obamacare, that is the one thing it certainly did accomplish is give a lot of people insurance that did not have it before.
So what did the extra incentives post-COVID, who did that include? People like at what income level, just so we understand who we're talking about?
Well, I know it went up that people now, you know, well, at $111,000 were getting subsidies instead of just $90,000. So, you know, it was extending it into a fairly, you know, reasonable income range. And I haven't been able to dig down and get all the details of how much subsidies, but I saw, you know, estimates of, you know, spending about $30 billion on this. So, but again, it was not that I, spending $30 billion may be okay, but this was not the right place to spend it. Mm-hmm. These are not needy people, and it's probably not going to stimulate the economy, you know, anyway. So this one, that subsidies probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. Letting them expire, and, you know, I've got a lot of respect for Joe Manchin as being a kind of middle-of-the-road kind of guy, and I haven't seen the whole package he's supporting, but this particular part of it, I would say, you know, probably shouldn't be there.
So when you said go away, they were set to go away, but this new bill, and I forgot what they're calling it these days, this new bill that Manchin came up with and we spoke about over the weekend, or at least they did on the Sunday morning shows, that would extend the extra benefits, correct?
That's my understanding,
okay.
Yes.
And when it comes to the health care, the money, the Medicaid expansion, that was something that Jindal, who was it to turn down originally, and then we decided to accept
Jindal,
it?
Jindal turned him down, and then John Bell, you know, instituted him. That was the very first thing he did when he came into office.
And I got that right.
And I think that was a good thing to do.
Did that wind up costing the state any more money, as Jindal was warning that once you take the money, then this and that and the other thing?
No, I mean, and that was, I think, a legitimate concern at the time, was to say, well, you know, what happened is the original, when it came out, is that the government offered to pay 100% of the premiums for all the newly enrolled people, and that would slowly go down to 90%. And he said, well, you know, once they get them enrolled, they could take it all away, and we wouldn't, you know, it's very hard to take a benefit away from people once you've given it to them. But it has gone down to 90% now. But to me, for every dollar we're spending, we're getting $9 of federal money to help support people in health insurance. It supports the industry, but it supports people. That's a good investment. I think we should keep that one.
Let me take a break. We come back. I want to talk about health care in the United States, and I want to take us back, if we can, Dub, to Obamacare. What's changed since then? Where do we stand? Got a presidential election coming up, midterms. How much of an issue is that going to be? Because so much has happened nationally, you know, with Ida here, so much has happened locally since then. I think we need a little refresher course on this, and I want to get your take on the money we spend in this country on health care and where it could be better spent, et cetera. Walter Dub Lane's our guest, giving us some of his time, associate professor of economics and finance at my alma mater, UNO, I'm proud to say. If you all have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along to Professor Dub Lane when we come back here on WWL. 9:23, quickly back to Dub Lane, associate professor of economics and finance at my alma mater, UNO. Dub, when it comes to these subsidies that this bill that Manchin came up with, it would extend, that you said probably are not needed, wouldn't necessarily surprise that he was associating himself with or wanted to extend, is that leading to inflation as well?
It could do a little bit. It's not going to be a major contributor, though. I mean, people will be going to, that'll be adding a few extra people, possibly getting some medical care procedures that they might not otherwise get. But I don't see that as being a real big factor.
Part of this, and I know you haven't had a chance to read the whole thing, and I don't think they're through marking it up yet, but part of this is opposed to lower prescription prices. How much of a problem is that in this country, and has there ever been any serious attempt to do that, and do you think this is a serious attempt to do that?
Well, I'm hoping so. That's an area where I think there is certainly some room that has a lot of popular appeal. The pharmaceutical, I've been a little bit of a defender of the pharmaceutical industry for recognizing that they have what are very high prices, but the research and development to produce new drugs is enormously expensive. And if you don't have high profits, we probably wouldn't be getting new drugs. And so in general, I felt like that a lot of the high drug prices were were really appropriate. But in the last 5 or 10 years, the drug companies have really started, you know, really, you know, going crazy. They've been taking drugs that have been around for a long time and jacking up the price by 100 or 200, 300%. And then there's also a lot of these new drugs that are coming out, chemotherapy drugs that are just, you know, talking about something where they cost hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to do. And so I think there is a point where some regulation might be appropriate. It's every other country in the world regulates drug prices except for us. But the you've got to do it fairly carefully. And, you know, there are some problems with it as well.
When, as it relates to the state of healthcare in the country, we got midterm elections coming up. I don't know where Obamacare is, what's still left, what's not. Is this something that either the Republicans, first of all, what is the state of healthcare in the country? I know your time's limited. What is something that they should address? And neither party seems to want to get behind any of it or do anything about it.
Well, I would say Obamacare has become, you know, just like Medicare and Medicaid. It's there. It isn't going anywhere. The Republicans will make lots of noise, repeal and replace and whatever, but they don't have any plan to replace it. And it has become so, people are so dependent, so popular. There's no really way. If they were to actually repeal it, they would get slaughtered at the polls. Mm-hmm. So that isn't going anywhere. I think it's become the new normal, so to speak. I mean, there's still some things to be worked on this. Again, the healthcare costs are a major problem. And again, there's some movement to that. Of course, the Democrats are still wanting to put everybody on a Medicare for all type of plan. That seems to not be a real big issue as now. They don't have a huge amount of support for that. But I think what we might see is a slow creeping in that direction is probably where we're going, I would guess.
Toward what, Dub?
Medicare for all.
Really?
Well, I mean, that's what the Democrats are really pushing for.
Right.
Is, in other words, to get rid of private insurance altogether, put everybody on the government plan, which is what they have in Canada, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
There's real problems with it in Canada in many ways for many people, but it's also pretty popular. And almost every other Western nation does have, you know, what we call universal insurance. Everybody has insurance. A lot of it's private in other countries, but anybody that doesn't have private insurance is on some type of a government plan. We still have a substantial number of people, millions of people in the United States that are uninsured. That it's been reduced tremendously by Obamacare, but there's still a bunch out there. And, you know, that doesn't seem appropriate to me.
So has the morals of that aside, the fact that less people are uninsured and the selling point of Obamacare, correct me if I'm wrong, was that the people wouldn't go to the emergency rooms. They would instead go to see their doctor. Well, care would be, or they take a lot better care of their health, et cetera. Has that, again, the morals aside, just the economics of it, has that resulted in what they thought it would?
Well, I mean, we're moving definitely in that direction. So we do have a lot more people that are now have some insurance. They can go get primary care, and they don't just wait until they go into the hospital with multiple, what we call more comorbidities, and are just really, you know, very expensive to treat. So there has been some improvement in that area. The healthcare system in the United States is in the middle of a transition of trying to move from treating people that are sick to trying to keep people well. And that's a very difficult move for the system to make. But Medicare is moving in that direction. That's what Medicare Advantage, a lot of them are doing. Medicaid is doing that in the state of Louisiana and other places. And Blue Cross is doing a lot, starting a lot of those type of programs. That's where I believe the country is going. And I think that's a good thing, because if you think about it, it's really better to spend money keeping people well than just to treat them after they're sick. In the old healthcare system, the only way doctors and hospitals made money is if they treated when you're sick. If they didn't really necessarily want financially, economically, it was not good for you if they're well. They make nothing off you if you're well. But there's a new payment system out now that's moving in that direction that I think is a really exciting move, but the transition is going to be very rough to get there.
And before we run out of time, has there been an estimate given of how much COVID, because you look at all people in the intensive care unit for a long time, how much that cost either Medicaid, Medicare, the government, healthcare system, et cetera? Any estimates on that?
I have to go look at that. I haven't seen that. I mean, it was the biggest for the hospital, what I know most about is from the hospital side. And for the hospital side, the big costs have been that when they were, the hospitals were flooded with patients on COVID, then they weren't doing elective surgeries, orthopedic surgeries, things of that sort, which is where the hospitals make money. So they were, the COVID patients are money losers for hospitals. And so hospitals had enormous losses in the first year. But luckily, the government gave them a lot of money to make up for it. So they did okay. In the second year of COVID, hospitals that money dried up, and the hospitals were still having higher costs because of nurses' wages, everything else. Costs of hospitals have gone up tremendously, and the revenues have not gone up. So the hospitals are, and doctors, to some extent, are doing the same type of thing. So COVID has made a major change in our healthcare system in a whole bunch of ways. And even though we're kind of out of that now, I haven't seen the exact numbers recently, but I know it's not like it was in the first wave or two.
I know your time's limited, Dub, and I'm going to let you go. But look, you can come back after you're back to work in the fall semester and so forth, and we'll spend an hour talking about how COVID has changed the healthcare delivery system in the United States. Because I look at it as, when I saw all of these full ICUs, somebody's going to have to pay for this somewhere, somehow. And I don't know if that bill's come due yet or not.
Well, yeah, and again, in the first year, the government did pay for that. Mm-hmm. But in the second year, they stopped. Anyway, but then we're still in a kind of a transition. But I'd love to come back and talk more about
that. Thank
this.
You. And the government, of course, is us and, you know, taxpayer money and the government is us. And everything
else. Absolutely.
Right. Thank you, Dub.
All right.
I appreciate your time. Walter Dub Lane, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at my alma mater, UNO. Louisiana is getting $134 million from the federal government over the next 5 years to help make our roads and bridges more resilient. What does that mean? What's it going to look like? Well, we'll find out when we talk to Dr. Sean Wilson on the other side of the break. He's the Secretary of Louisiana Department of Transportation and Development. Speaking of roads and bridges, it's 9:32, 28 till 10. Let's take a look at traffic on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.